Kia ora and welcome to Yak Yarns, brought to you by the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council.
Yak Yarns is an informative show that aims to educate and bring awareness to all things youth health. You can find us on our Instagram, Facebook and website.
Let us know if you have any questions
or if there's anything you want to know from our friendly health professionals.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's time to yak about health.
Welcome along to our first episode of Yak Yarns for 2022. It is so exciting to be here. My name's Chelsea and I'm the chair of the CDHB Youth Advisory Council.
My name's Dakota and I'm a council member.
And today we have got a very exciting guest joining us, Nikki Scott. Nikki is a paediatric charge nurse manager for paediatric outpatients, day-to-day neurodevelopmental services at the Canterbury District Health Board. She's also our superstar staff member for the YAC, so we very much appreciate and love her. And thank you so much for being here today.
No worries. Hi, everyone.
So, Nikki, tell us a bit more about who you are. How long have you been working at the DHB? What does your everyday job look like? Give us a,
I have been working at the DHB for probably 24 years now, which is really scary to say. I manage four different teams, which is brilliant. They're all very different teams, very different personalities, which is great. I love that. I love the banter. I love the challenge of it because they're all very experienced nurses who feel completely free to tell me when they think something's not a good idea. And they're also really great at telling me what they think needs to change, where the gaps are, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I just love it. I love working with the people that I do, and I think they're an amazing bunch of people.
Cool. So what actually got you into nursing, Nikki?
I used to, like when I was a little kid, I was the kid in the neighbourhood that looked after everybody else's children. Like I just always loved kids. And I really wanted to be, I'm so old that in when I was little there was Karatani nurses, which was a role, I know you're looking at me as if you say, what's that? It's a role, it was a nurse who basically looked after mums and babies when they just had a baby. Mm. And if you had a baby that had just needed a little bit more care, you would have a Karatani nurse come in and help you look after that baby. And I just thought this was the most amazing job and that was what I wanted to do. By the time I got to nursing, there actually no longer were Karatani nurses. So I thought, okay, that's fine. I'll be a nurse. I'll be a paediatric nurse. It's not quite as good, but it's almost as good. And, I've always looked after kids from the first time. I think my first job was in an adult ward, but very quickly it was in Southern Cross Hospital. And very quickly they realised that I loved kids, so I got the T's and A's, the grommets. Nobody ever wanted to do those lists, so I got those lists. I could do them every time they were on, and I had great fun. Really enjoyed it.
That sounds so
great. Yeah,
it does. I don't think I could ever be a nurse, no. But if I was going to be a nurse, it'd be with kids.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I could not work in the adult ward, too stressful.
No. I think if you're over 16, if you're taller than me, I don't know what to do with you.
So if you had a young person come up to you that is considering being a nurse, what would be your top tips for them if they're thinking about this?
I think if you're considering being a nurse, really good things is to broaden your approach. So really important to take the sciences at school, but have a much broader outlook than that. And actually being on the YAC committee is a really good thing to do because then you get me doing your reference when you apply for nursing school. So, you know, come on, guys.
That's a plug from Nikki. Plug from Nikki.
Yeah. And the other thing that I would say is just really believe in yourself. Like when I was finishing primary school, my primary school teacher said to me, I think you should take home economics and sewing because you don't have the brains to do anything else.
Oh. So
that just made me work harder. And when I got my master's degree, I really wanted to show her that's doing it.
I would have gone back and been like,
so,
see.
Yeah, so don't, if that's what you really want to do, don't let anybody tell you you can't. There's always a way. And if I can do it, anyone can. So,
Nikki, inspirational.
All right, tough question. Highs and lows of the job.
The highs are definitely working with the kids. Like my job is supposed to be a desk job. I'm not very good at sitting at my desk for a long period of time. So every now and then I have to break out and go and play with kids. My favourite thing to do is give them 10 ml syringes and a vomit bucket full of water and you have water fights. You can only do that in the areas that have got carpet, however. I love the mad things with kids. Like they love, I've got a fart machine that has 8 different fart noises with a remote control so that you can fart around corners. And it's things like that. It's just the madness and the stupidity of the day that you get to spend with kids that I really love. I think the hard part of it is just trying to fit everything into the day. And when you see nurses at the end of their shift that really, you know, there are things that they would love to have done, but they just haven't had the time or the resource. That's my job to make that happen. Mm. I hate seeing that. I hate seeing nurses feel like that. So I try really hard not to let that happen.
Mm. So we're going to take this a little bit more broader now and go into young people here in Canterbury. But what do you see are the big challenges that young people are facing right now that you're coming across?
I think there's a lot of anxiety out there. And for a lot of young people, it's really good because we've got much better at having the conversations about anxiety now.
Mm.
And hopefully, I really hope that young people feel as if they can reach out. But I think that's probably the biggest thing. You know, you see it every day. There just is a general increase in anxiety, particularly amongst young people, because, you know, when you think of the earthquakes, the mosque shootings, the COVID, the people that are adolescents now and into their 20s have coped with all of that at a very important stage of their growth and development. And so, of course, it's going to affect people. And I think we're getting much better at putting in supports, and we're getting much better at having those conversations. And I think it's great that we're actually a lot better now at encouraging people to carry on with their normal life, but put coping strategies in place to do that.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't that long ago that if you had problems, you were withdrawn from your normal life. We fixed your problems and then sent you back out to it. And that was not a good model of care. That wasn't a good way to do it. So I'm really glad that we've changed that model of care. And I would like to think that we're a bit more open and a bit more supportive now.
Yeah, definitely.
It definitely does feel more open to talk about anxieties and fears and stuff just in a normal everyday conversation.
Yeah, mental health is definitely getting talked about more, which is great. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Apart from anxiety, do you think there's anything we should be urgently addressing with young people that's getting missed?
Climate change is always a big one. I think that's really important for young people. So people my generation have to actually sit up and take notice. And there's really basic things that we can all do, and I think we should be doing. The time for talking about it is well and truly gone. We have to all make sure that we're doing what we can. And I think basically just listening to young people, like, being part of Youth Advisory Council, I often say to people, it actually energises me because it makes you realise what the important things are in life. You know, we carry on and we're all in our own lives and we see what happens in our own lives. But unless you put yourself out there and start listening to people who are a different generation, you actually don't know what the problems are. So I would really encourage anyone my generation just to get out there and talk to young people and say, what can we do? And you young guys, just be really honest. Just stop us and say, hey, that's not okay. This is what you can be doing. You need to start now.
I promise we have not told her to plug the Youth Advisory Council multiple times in this conversation.
Not at all.
Okay, so we're going to break it up a little bit from all the questions. So we're going to give you some quick fire questions.
Okay.
So first of all, what's your favourite thing to do on a day off?
Sit in my red chair outside with a glass of wine and my Kindle.
Oh.
That sounds so good.
Mm.
Something that makes you laugh.
I love anything toilet humour, fart jokes, anything like that. I love my fart machine. It's my favourite thing.
That doesn't surprise me. favourite movie?
A Fish Called Wanda. I've seen it so many times and it still makes me laugh out loud.
I don't think I've actually watched it yet. I think you've told me about it and I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I've heard about it as well. It seems very emotional.
Oh,
it's brilliant.
It's emotional.
It's hilarious though.
I'm getting one's emotional, one's humour.
It is emotional, but it's really funny.
I am a sappy movie guy though.
Yeah.
Sweet or savoury food?
Definitely savoury. Haven't got a sweet tooth at all.
Ah, Nicky.
Can't go past a good steak and cheese pie.
A huge bag of potato chips is my thing. I can't stop. If I buy a big bag, I eat a big bag.
I mean, great. I love potato chips.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. A song you like at the moment.
This my favourite song, and my son will probably not forgive me for this, is Happy Ever After by Sweet Mix Kids.
Ooh.
Now, I have to say I'm slightly biased when it comes to Sweet Mix Kids, but I love this song. I just absolutely love it. It's the sort of song you can put on your way to work, and it gets you energised for the day.
Oh, well, we are going to play that right now.
Yay.
And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Simple thing, like it ain't no thing. Easy peasy, someone gets me. It's a straight up fact, no point in fighting back. Why the fight when it feels right?
That was a great song.
Good choice of you, Nikki.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Go Sweet Mix.
Alrighty, what advice would you give to a young person who's struggling to navigate the health system, whether it's getting their files, diagnoses, everything right like that?
It is really hard. I think what you need to do is find one person. And I do find this a little bit, that people feel as if they're given the runaround, particularly if you ring the hospital and you don't have a name to ask for. It's not that anyone's trying to give you the runaround, it's just really difficult to figure out who the best person is for you to talk to if you don't know who that person is. So if it's to do with the hospital, what I would do is ask to speak to the charge nurse of whatever service you were in. If it's to do with primary health, go back to your practice nurse. Honestly, practice nurses are amazing. They're just a great person to know. They can help you with all sorts of things. If it's that you feel as if things are not happening quickly enough, go back to the person that referred you and ask them what their advice is. You can always ring the hospital and ask for advice if you know the service that you need to talk to. And charge nurses, like, I'm always more than happy to talk to anyone. So if it's anything to do with paediatrics, you can ring me. As long as you're under 16, just give me a call. It's easier for me to navigate the system than it is for you, so I'm happy to do that. If you find someone in the service that you're in that you find easy to talk to, say to that person, do you mind if I have problems? Can I give you a ring? It makes such a difference if you can tell the operator a name for them to put you through to.
And so just like a follow-up question for that. So if young people are really struggling to access care in general, what can they be doing about that? Because we know that there's still some issues with getting into a GP, or they might have a GP that they've kind of grown up with, but now they'd like to move to a different GP, but we know in crisis at the moment it's hard to move GPs. Have you got any advice for a young person who might be navigating that right now?
I often say to people, when they're talking about getting into a GP or changing GP, the best advice I can give you is go to your local chemist and talk to your local chemist, because they deal with all the GPs in your area. They often have knowledge of who's taking on patients and who isn't. And if you have a specific thing, if you want someone that's specifically used to dealing with young children, if you want someone that's really good with adolescent health, anything specific that you have, they're the ones that are more likely to know who in your area has got that specialty. So they're a wealth of information and really good to talk to.
That's good advice, actually.
It's great advice.
Yeah, I wouldn't think about that.
No.
Well, I've been here a long time.
You're not that old, are you? Okay, so we'll change track a little bit and then talking more about health professionals. So if they're listening to this podcast right now, what advice would you have for them for working with young people?
The first thing I would say, and I think this is really important for anyone you're looking after, the first thing you need to do is go in, say hi, tell them who you are, tell them your name, and just check in with them and see, this is the plan for the day. How do you feel about that? Is there any way you want this done? You know, give people as much choice as possible, particularly young people. I think, you know, I know with my boys, one of my boys was very outgoing and would very easily have told anyone that would listen exactly what his needs were. My other boy was very introverted, and unless you specifically asked him about things, there's no way you would know what was going on with him. And so I think you only get to know that about someone by introducing yourself and by talking to them about what your plan is for the day and what they would like. You have to specifically give them time and space to be able to answer you and to have input into their treatment. You know, it's not consent unless they actually have input into their treatment. And so that's the first thing that you have to do. And I do think you've got to make space in your day to actually talk to people, and it doesn't take long. Like, I know when I was on the wards, I used to make sure that I went in every hour, and even if it was just to pop your head in the door and say, hey, how are you? I'm absolutely flat tack at the moment, but do you need anything right now, or I'll come back again next hour? And then people know what's going on. They know what's happening. And I'm sorry, I'm going to plug yak again, but the backpacks that you guys do, I think they're really good because, you know, all that information in there about the ward routines, about the rights of anyone in hospital and things like that, I think that's excellent information for people to have. And it's almost like if you get given this in the backpack, it's hopefully, it's like giving you permission that we're saying, this is what you need to do, this is absolutely fine, we are so accepting of this, please just talk to us. So, yeah, hopefully that gives a message to the young people to talk to the health professionals, and hopefully the health professionals listen. I think most health professionals come to work, well, all health professionals come to work to do a good job. It's not the sort of work you can stay in unless you love it. And so I think they are ready and willing, they just sort of need that open dialogue probably.
Yeah, definitely. Can you come be my nurse when I'm on wards? Because absolutely. I'm like, I would love an hour check-in if I'm in there.
Oh, I'll just pop in. I'll bring coffee, jelly beans.
Thank you, Nikki. Right, sorted.
Personal on-call nurse.
My fart machine.
Oh, great. Might as well bring some fun to the wards.
Days
you know?
Made.
Yeah.
Just to piggyback off that last question, what would your advice be to young people to make their experience better?
I think just talking, saying what you need, it's not easy to do. Some people can do that really easily. For most people, that's not an easy thing to do at all. But I think when your nurse comes on at the beginning of the shift, that's the ideal time to say to them, I really need to talk to you about something. Can you come back when you've got 5 minutes? Or, you know, just try and pluck up the courage just to utter that first sentence. Once you've uttered that first sentence, it should get easier. The health professional should make it easier for you. And that's in any setting. You know, I keep talking about the hospital because I've worked there for so many years, but in any setting, in your GP practice, your practice nurses are so easy to talk to. They're generally brilliant people. And anyone that's in the health profession is there to help. They just need to know what they need to do.
So we're just a quick, more specific question that we had come in. Someone was asking if they can actually access the health records, because sometimes, you know, doctors can sit there and they'll make a whole ton of notes or things, and then you never actually see those notes ever again.
Yeah.
Can you access them, and how would you go about that?
Yeah, you definitely can. They're your health records. And so what you do is you contact patient information. If it's when you've been an inpatient in the hospital, you talk to patient information and they will get your health records for you. If it's through primary health, I would actually talk to the practice nurse, because I'm not sure exactly how you access your health records through primary health. There will be a way. There has to be a formal way of doing this. It will never be as easy as just going in and asking for them. And the reason for that is that what they like to do is they like to have someone to sit down and for you to have the opportunity to go through the medical records with somebody that knows, that can sort of talk them through with you. And the reason for that is we tend to do our medical records in medical speak. And we use a lot of acronyms, and, you know, if you haven't got someone with you that can tell you what that means, it makes it really difficult. And so there's always a formal process, there's always a formal way of doing it, but it is always absolutely possible.
And there's another, just a like follow-up question from that. Some people I know in the past, young people have accessed their health records, got them fine, then found that some information wasn't as correct as what they had maybe told a health professional or something like that. Can they actually get changed? Is there any way for health records to get, you know, updated, or are they just kind of set in stone?
No, they're not set in stone. So then you need the patient advocate, and it's a shame it's not a one-stop shop for everything, but there is a patient advocate, and they will work on your behalf to do that. I think once a medical record is written, and I hope I'm correct in saying this, it is a legal document, so you cannot change that document, but you can put in an amendment to it. And so, for instance, if it was a paper document, you could put an amendment in that's stapled to the bit of paper where you're saying this isn't quite accurate. So you're actually reading the amendment when you're reading the original document. If it's electronic, I think they can probably slot it in at the same time as well. But I think I'm correct in saying that it has to be an amendment rather than altering the original record, because that's a legal document, you actually can't alter it.
Yeah, interesting. I actually didn't know that.
Neither.
So it's good to know. We had a really specific question come in, so I'll just read it entirely word for word. So it said, "Hey Nikki, you're such a gift to the department. My question is, when a child is diagnosed with a neuro condition, the info is often given to the parent to do with it as they see fit. Are there currently any provisions to store full info, RE investigations and diagnosis, so that when they become a teen or an adult, they can exercise their right to have full information about themselves? Or are they solely reliant on what their family have told them and accessing any notes that haven't yet been destroyed? I'm an adult who has stuffed all information about their own diagnosis, which is tough, so I'm curious if the situation has changed." Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like a moving feast at the moment. So again, any information that you want as an adult, if you want information from when you were a child, you go through patient information, you absolutely have a right to that information. It will actually get a little bit easier because we're going to electronic information. And so, you know, like a lot of GPs have now, where they have the Manage My Health portal, where you can actually go back historically and look at your blood results, your prescriptions, there will actually be that availability of all your medical records. Mm. Now, this is I have no IT experience. I know how to use a computer to do what I do, and that's about it. But for people that are working on this, you can imagine how massive this is, because we're going to one, New Zealand Health. What we need is for this medical record to be national. So that's a huge thing in itself. And then we need it to be able to cope with all the privacy issues, because, you're entitled to know that your information is private. But then we've got to balance that with the fact that this is your information and you're entitled to access it when you want to. So that's not an easy thing to do. It's probably, I think, still going to be a couple of years away, but it will definitely make life easier once that happens. But it's your medical records. You're entitled to it. It doesn't matter what age you were and what age you are now. You're still entitled to that information.
Interesting.
The other thing, just for the neurodevelopmental side of it, which I think is really exciting, is we've just trialled a pilot, which is now going to carry on because it was really successful. And so what we're going to do is, what we recognise is, when you have a diagnosis like that, the diagnosis itself isn't the end point, that actually it affects the rest of your life, and it often changes as you grow. So when you hit puberty, there are different challenges that you didn't think about when you were five, and your parents certainly didn't think about. When you are changing intermediate school to high school, there's another challenge that you certainly didn't think about when you got your diagnosis. And then when you're transitioning, so that you're going from child health to adult health. And so what we've trialled in the neurodevelopmental field is a system where we actually will send via email information that is specific for your diagnosis, but for your age. Mm. And so what's going to happen is, every 2 years, you'll get sent information that says, hey, this might just come up for you in the future. These are the resources that might be quite good for you to know about. Don't forget, these resources are still here, that have always been here. And it's just pushing information out to people so that they know, just have a look and see what you think. If you don't need it, that's great. If you do need it, it's all there and these are the places to go. And so now that that's been so successful for the neurodevelopmental, it would be great to do that for other diagnoses as well. Mm. So there's, with the IT world opening up, it's incredible what we can do. And there'll just be more and more stuff like this that we're doing, just to help families as they navigate through the first 16 years, really.
Wow. That's pretty cool, actually.
It seems a bit amazing.
Yeah, when you think of all the conditions, and like you say, different age, even just a couple of years, can make a huge difference in what you're dealing with your health condition. So just a question, doubling back on something you said about the My Health that's at like primary care and stuff. Mm. Is there a reason why not all GPs have them? Because I was like, my GP still does not have it yet.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious as to why some have and some don't.
I think probably the reason is that GP practices are a business. And so because they're a private business, they choose basically what the funding gets spent on. Now, for some GPs, the priority will be their physical building, because, a lot of those medical centres are getting quite old now. Mm. And so they only have limited funds, and so they have to decide really where those funds get spent. And it is a big expense to put in anything like that in the IT world. So it's just basically, I think, a decision about what the priorities are and have they got the money to be able to do it.
Interesting.
Mm. Very interesting. So we know that with the whole COVID-19, Delta, Omicron, whatever, it's made teenagers' lives very difficult. What are your best well-being tips to navigate around all of this new coming?
I think the well-being tips don't change. Doesn't matter what's going on. If you can do these things, it will help you get through. And so I know a lot of teenagers don't want to hear this, but make sure you're in bed by 11 o'clock every night.
Oh, okay.
I know, it's just
about
impossible.
I'm always in bed by 9:30.
Well done, Dakota.
Gold star for you, not me.
Yay.
If you can get into bed, even if you're not sleeping, if you're in bed without devices, so put your phone.
See, that's where I get no gold star.
Yeah.
Put your phone on. Do not disturb. But yeah, the important thing is just to have that downtime. So if you can, try to get into bed by 11 o'clock. Try not to have any devices after 11 o'clock. If it's at all possible, try and get out of bed by 9 o'clock. And again, I know that's very unpopular. So what I would say is, if that's absolutely not possible, and I still remember being your age, believe it or not, and I used to have to set the alarm if I had anything before 11 o'clock in the morning, so I understand. But if you can't do those things, then try and keep the time you go to bed at about the same time every day. Try and keep the time that you get up in the morning at about the same time every day. I think the two are the most important things for me anyway, is when you get up in the morning, try and have a conversation with someone within an hour of getting up. And that doesn't have to be, like, I live by myself, so it's not like I've got somebody else there to have a conversation, and the neighbours think it's weird if I knock on their door at 7 o'clock. So that can be anything. You can sort of on your walk to work, just stop and say g'day to someone and how are you. It's as simple as that. You just need human contact within an hour of waking up. And try and get outside for at least an hour every day. That makes a massive difference. You know, there's so many good things about getting outside. You get your vitamin D, which makes a difference to your mental well-being. Just getting out there and feeling the fresh air and blowing the cobwebs out of your head, you know, just makes a big difference. And it seems like such a simple thing, but if you're not in the habit of doing it, most people don't do it.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, well-being tips are relevant to not just COVID-19, but in general.
Yeah.
But we know that actually just being a teenager can be difficult. Yeah. You know, like there's so much that you are navigating. You're navigating family, friends, school, work, you know, social relations.
With the rise of social media as well.
Yeah, there's all that pressure that gets put on you. Then if you're living with a health condition, that's a whole nother story. Mm. And so actually being a teenager can be so difficult. It doesn't get given enough credit for being a teenager. What advice would you give your 16-year-old self?
Oh, dear God, there's so much I want to tell my 16-year-old self. I don't think we've got that much time. I think the most important thing, because I remember being very unconfident, which you probably find hard to believe seeing me there, because I'm such a bolshy thing. But at 16, I was very unconfident. I was confident around my friends and around my family, but if you put me in any other situation, I just sat back and said nothing. And probably giggled ridiculously and nervously. So I think the hardest thing to do, but probably what we learn about 10 years on, is, you know, you're a really good person. You actually have a lot of value in the world. You are the only person in the entire world that is you. And that's really valuable. That's an amazing thing. And so just do it in increments, do it as much as you can. I certainly at 16 could not have done anything like this. So I think find something that you think you're good at and do more of that. The stuff that you think you're not good at, just do it in little increments. Just try and build up slowly. The people around you that tell you how amazing you are, see more of those people. The people around you that tell you that you're no good, just don't see them again. Just cut them out of your life. You don't need it.
Good advice from Nikki.
Great advice.
Yeah. Inspirational. How we all need it, you know? Build you up.
I made so many bad decisions at 16.
Oh, yeah, same here.
Who doesn't?
Don't think I want to talk about it.
It's the time to do it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So piggybacking off that question as well, what would your advice be for someone who is set on doing one thing but they don't know if they want to do it for the rest of their life?
God, don't think about the rest of your life. Crikey, Dick. I think if you want to do something, then do it. You know, if it makes you feel good, if you feel as if you're contributing, if it feels like that's where you want to be, then that's always... Like, honestly, I've got two boys. We used to tell them the whole time they were growing up, do what you're passionate about. There are enough people in the world that doing a job 9 to 5 just to get money... don't ever do a job just to get money. Do something you're passionate about. And Jeff and I were really lucky that we both loved our jobs. Not everybody has that. So if you have something that you're passionate about, then absolutely do it. Really important. The only thing that I would say to that is one of the things that worries me now is the amount of student debt that people come out with. So this is just my personal view, and you can feel free to completely ignore it. But I just think if you're going to be doing something that's going to cost you a lot of money, maybe be sure that that's what you want to do before you go into it, because you don't want to be $50,000 in debt and then realise that's not where you want to work.
Nikki, where was that advice for me many years ago now? Like, my student loan, I don't even want to look at it anymore. I ignore the emails when they come through.
I've just gotten an email about my fees free, and I'm like, yay, wait, I used 6 months already last year. Oh, no.
Oh, so yeah, I wasn't even, so I feel hard. Old because that wasn't even a thing when I started uni. I don't even get that anymore.
You are so where you're meant to be, Chelsea. You seriously are.
Oh, yeah, but it took me multiple years to get to that point, Nikki. Multiple, like, loans that I've had previously for that. But, it's difficult. And I think, like, when I've been talking to people recently, this time, like, age gap, you know, that 16 to 24-year-olds, it's a lot of navigating what you want to do, what you want to do. You feel so much pressure from people. Do you have advice for people who might feel really overwhelmed? They felt like they knew where they were going. Now they have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice at all for someone who's just doesn't know?
Yeah, absolutely. I did that. I was in practice nursing for 15 years and I was at the top of my game. I was one of the accredited practice nurses and was doing tutoring at ARA for asthma and all sorts of things. Loved it, really into it. But thought, okay, where am I going from here? Times change. And so I completely left practice nursing and went back to the surgical paediatric ward. And I never regretted it. I loved it. But I went from knowing exactly what I was doing and feeling as if I had a lot of knowledge to thinking, oh my God, what have I done and why did I do this? And I just kept thinking to myself, just give yourself a year. And the charge nurse that I had then was really good, because I had an interview with her 3 months into it, and I said to her, I just feel as if I'm floundering. I feel as if I know nothing. You know, I just have so much to learn about the system and about the things that we're dealing with in here that, you know, I just have never seen before. Because it wasn't just surgery, it did burns and child cancer and all sorts of things as well. And the best advice she ever gave me, I've never forgotten it, is you have to give yourself a break. You have to give yourself a year. If you're working at something full-time, it takes a minimum of 6 months to even feel as if you're safe. It takes a year to feel as if you know what you're doing. So try really hard, take on as much information as you can, learn every way you can about what you're doing, but give yourself a break.
I think young people are hearing that a lot at the moment. Have a break, take a break. It can be great.
Yeah, and definitely, and there's more talks about like gap years and stuff when you come out of high school. And I actually, at the time when I was leaving high school, I was like, there's no way I can do a gap year, like I'll lose everything. But now I actually really wish I'd taken that time to just kind of get out of that routine of high school, learn what it's like to navigate the world before running off and spending all your money in student debt. But okay, we're going to finish off with a final big question that we ask everyone on this. What is one thing you would like young people to take away from today's conversation?
I really want young people to believe in themselves. I think that's getting harder to do. And, you know, that's the one thing that it's in your job description at the moment, you know, up to age 24, when you think that you really aren't fully developed in your mental capacity until you're 25. It's actually later for males, I have to tell you, Dakota.
27.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think there is going to be hard times. There is going to be doubts. Just as much as you can, please believe in yourselves. You are amazing. Even if you think you're not, you really are. If anybody needs to, you know, sort of just have a bit of a pep talk, then find someone that you trust. You know, when you're feeling really low and you're really feeling as if life is really tough, find someone that you trust and go and talk to them, because they will tell you the amazing things that you are and that you do, and that's what you need to hear then. So, yeah, believe in yourself, and when you're finding it really tough, please reach out.
Nikki, good advice. Oh. I feel like we should just like clip that tiny little bit, and I'll just play it every morning when I wake up.
Yeah.
That'll just be my like morning affirmation.
Morning motivation. Yeah,
from Nikki.
Do you know, I've got a Spotify list, because I love music. I've got a Spotify list that is songs that do that for me, and I play that every day on the way into work.
That's a good
That's
idea.
Another great piece of advice.
Gets you right in the mood. It's really good.
Wow.
If you see me boogie at the red lights, you know that's why.
You know, I can also imagine that too. Like.
Red light dance party is the best.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Nikki.
No
thank
worries.
You for all your wisdom and advice about youth health. It's been great conversation.
It's been amazing.
No yeah.
Thanks for joining us on our pioneering episode of Yak Yarns.
Oh, I'm so excited. It was brilliant.
Thanks, Nikki.
And I can hear my children saying, you asked her this stuff?
Thanks, Nikki.
Yak Yarns, for fun conversations with health professionals about youth health. Get the podcast at plainsfm.org.nz, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can get in touch with the CDHB Youth Advisory Council on the CDHB website, Facebook, Instagram, or you can email them at cdhbyouth@gmail.com.